Earth Matters, a weekly segment of environmental news.
Our demands may be radical, but the demands of the Earth are truly non-negotiable. Corporations and biology do not mix.
In Berkeley, I'm Amanda Bellerby. You're listening to Flashpoints on Pacifica Radio. In 2002, a federal jury found the FBI and the Oakland police guilty of violating Earth First organizers Judy Berry and Daryl Cherney's First Amendment rights. Judy and Daryl were in fact the victims of a vicious car bomb assassination attempt, yet the FBI arrested them and framed them as terrorists, using the crime to discredit Earth First. The FBI and the Bush administration seem to believe that if they can successfully label an individual as a terrorist, they can prosecute them for protected free speech, indeed for crimes that were not even committed. Eco-activists across this country are now being swept up in an alarming witch hunt that many suspect is part of the same FBI agenda of targeting progressive movements and quashing dissent. On January 20th, 11 individuals were charged in a 65-count indictment. The charges stem from a string of arsons, sabotage, and vandalism incidents claimed by the Earth Liberation Front and the Animal Liberation Front between 1996 and 2001. The FBI labeled the actions terrorism, despite the fact that not one of the 15 alleged incidents caused a single injury. The latest chapter in their aggressive green scare is the February 22nd arrest of Rod Coronado in Arizona. Coronado is a well-known, outspoken Native American activist who has spent the last 18 years of his life fighting for environmental justice. What sets his story apart from all the others is that this time Rod Coronado was arrested for giving a speech. Joining me to discuss this by phone from New York is Ben Rosenfeld. He's a civil rights attorney based in San Francisco, and he was part of the legal team that won Judy Berry's historic lawsuit against the FBI and Oakland police. Ben Rosenfeld, welcome to Flashpoints.
Thank you.
Can you begin by giving us some background on Rod Coronado? What kind of actions is he known for, and what has he done time for?
I don't know the history of Rod Coronado's activism in detail. I do know that he did time in federal prison in connection with an alleged arson incident, and that at one time he was on the FBI's most wanted list. He did his time, he was released, and since then he's been giving speeches to university audiences, to activist audiences. He's a very public figure, a charismatic and eloquent speaker.
What is this most recent arrest for?
For some time, the FBI in San Diego, California, has been investigating an arson which occurred in some kind of housing construction project. They've never said anything to suggest they suspect that he was involved in any way in the arson. They haven't arrested or indicted anybody in connection with that arson. But they have focused very heavily on a speech which Rod Coronado gave shortly after this in San Diego, in which, among other things, he demonstrated how he made an incendiary device using common household items such as a plastic jug and gasoline in relation to the crime that he had been convicted of years ago. It's been clear for some time that the FBI has wanted to put Rod back in prison since about the moment that they let him out. They dog him just about everywhere he goes. Famously, he found a transponder on the bottom of his vehicle after he was released from prison. He took it to the FBI office and said, "I think you lost this," to which they kind of, you know, looked every which way but at him and said, "We don't know anything about that." It's been clear that the FBI has really been gunning for him and has wanted to make a political example of him since he was released. And in fact, he was also convicted recently in Arizona of the so-called crime of trying to interfere in a civil disobedience kind of way with the very macabre hunt of a single mountain lion who had more or less only scowled at somebody on a path and then run away. The prosecutor was quoted in the newspaper as saying that Rod was a violent anarchist and a terrorist, and the prosecutor lamented that they couldn't try him for that in that case. So I think that's a pretty good window on what the government's real motivation is.
And that's the voice of Ben Rosenfeld. Ben, in your recent legal memo, you wrote, quote, "The government has turned speech into violence," unquote. Can you explain?
Well, what I mean is that in criminalizing pure speech, the government believes that some forms of speech, and it would have you believe that Rod's form of speech is so dangerous as to create a clear and present danger to public safety. The problem with that, or the many problems with it, are, one, that he's not speaking to some revolutionary audience bent and determined and capable of going out and making violent revolution. What he demonstrated is not an opaque science or even a well-guarded secret. Anybody who wants to discover how to make a bomb from common household items can go surfing online. I mean, there are myriad ways in which people could arrive at this information if they wanted it. And, of course, most importantly, there's absolutely nothing from his speech which would cause anybody to believe that his intent was that people go out and engage in crimes.
And for comparison's sake, in terms of the zeal with which the FBI is pursuing these sorts of alleged crimes, we can look at the statistics from the National Abortion Foundation. In the years 1977 through 2005, a total of 5,107 incidents have been reported, 7 murders, 17 attempted murders, 41 bombings, anthrax threats, 655, acid attacks, 100. These crimes include kidnapping, burglary, stalking. Do you know if they're actually pursuing these right-wing criminals who are targeting abortion clinics and abortion providers?
Well, they're clearly not doing anything of the sort under this law, and the way in which they've used this law is extremely revealing of what their real purpose is. Harkening back, really, to the COINTELPRO days of J. Edgar Hoover's FBI. I mean, for example, the only other time that we're aware of that they've used this law in a political context is against a young black anarchist, then age 20, named Sherman Austin, who was convicted of doing nothing more than linking on a website which he hosted called RaiseTheFist.com to another website which had been designed by a young white man, a 16-year-old white kid from Orange County, which described, among other things, some crude recipes for how to make a bomb and a smoke bomb. Sherman Austin ended up doing a year in prison. He's been released on extremely restrictive terms of probation, which forbid him from associating with certain groups and individuals, from owning a computer, or even from going near a computer. The white kid was never even arrested, so that says a little something more about how selective and targeted these prosecutions are, how far we've drifted from free speech in this country, and just how risky it can be to believe that you're shielded by the First Amendment when you engage in political discourse.
Having been one of the attorneys on the Judy Berry, Daryl Cherney case against the federal government, the FBI, and the Oakland police, how does this case remind you of that or differ from that?
It's very reminiscent in the sense that the FBI has a long and sordid history of targeting political activists. Some would make the case that that is its raison d'etre. That's what it was formed to do and has remained in the business of doing. And so in the case of Judy Berry and Daryl Cherney, the government was at least alert for an opportunity to exploit the tragedy of an attempted assassination of Judy Berry by then trying to pin this bomb, which an assassin had clearly put under her seat in an attempt to kill her, on her, the victim. And the FBI is operating in a relative vacuum in this country right now without political or social backlash, and they just keep encroaching and encroaching on constitutional rights with really nothing to slow them down that I can see. There are three interrelated problems in the kinds of political prosecutions that we're seeing today as part of what you've described as the Green Scare. I mean, one is the obvious problem that some people are accused of crimes which they simply didn't commit, like Judy Berry and Daryl Cherney. Another is the problem of selective prosecution, as evidenced by the fact that they went after Sherman Austin, a young black man, and didn't go after a young white kid, the actual author of the content that they blamed Sherman Austin for. I'm not saying they should have, but it's certainly indicative of their selective prosecution and the ugliness that race still plays in that decision-making. And then there's the problem of unconstitutional laws. When you're charged under an unconstitutional statute, you're in a real pickle because your choices are between going to trial and asserting your innocence, even if you're technically guilty of the crime and risking that you're going to do a decade or more in prison, or you have to take a plea. And then you get to serve less time, but in the process, you're validating the police state, you're validating the unconstitutional law, and you're fixing your name permanently on terrorism watch lists. Rod Coronado is at the very beginning of this process. He's been indicted, and he's now at the base of a mountain and has to now defend himself against this grossly unjust charge in the face of this unconstitutional law. If we'd come to our senses as a society, and certainly if the court is looking at it rationally, then this law is very susceptible to challenge by any reasonable measure or historic test of free speech in this country. I mean, I think Noam Chomsky put it really, really well when he said, if you believe in free speech, then you defend speech that offends you, because to only defend speech that you agree with is a function of the commissars of Soviet Russia and Nazi Germany. And so regardless of whether you agree with the message or you find it odious, it behooves everybody who believes in the principle of freedom of expression and freedom of thought to rally to Rod Coronado's defense in this case.
Do you have any comment about the way some of the mainstream environmental groups in the past couple of weeks have been distancing themselves from these folks who've been indicted?
Well, I'm very concerned, because when something like this happens and when it's fanned by the flames of politics and hysteria, which in this case we know it is, a senior member of the FBI's anti-terrorism unit went before Congress and marked radical environmental activists and animal rights people as the number one domestic security threat. And soon after that, all these indictments started hitting. People have to come together to insist on democratic processes, because when something like this happens, the people who are afflicted are not only the people who are rounded up, but a much wider community of friends, family, sympathizers, activists, people who suddenly find themselves on various lists and subject to surveillance and harassment and possibly facing grand jury subpoenas where they have almost no constitutional rights, because a grand jury in this country is essentially an inquisition and a star chamber and a constitutional exclusion area where you're asked all sorts of impertinent questions that nobody in a free society thinks you can be asked about your politics and your associations and the groups you belong to.
Well, we're going to have to leave it right there. I want to thank you, Ben Rosenfeld, civil rights attorney from San Francisco. We will be staying in touch with this case, I'm sure, on Rod Coronado. For those of you who are interested in finding out more, reading Ben's memo and all the information about the other indictments that are happening, you can go to indybay.org. That's indybay.org. Go to the environment page. You'll see links to all these other stories. Ben Rosenfeld, thank you so much for joining us on Flashpoints.
Thank you for having me.
You can say that all of us are terrorists, madmen bent on destroying all that's free. You can say that we are building weapons as your bombers fly from sea to bloody sea. You can say you're with us or against us, and to die quietly is what we now must do. You can maintain your innocence. You can say that you are many as you represent the few. But there will always be resistance. The next battle will always be near. As long as you have everything, there will be those who have nothing to fear. Our future is not yours to choose.
That's Resistance by David Rovics, who will be playing in the Bay Area March 11th and 12th. Check davidrovics.com for details.